Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Football and a hell of a week in sports and what's going on, my boy?
Not much. You know, it was a very exciting week. Again, like we talk about every week, you know, the football season ticks down and it gets, you know, gets harder and harder because I know football is definitely a major focus of this show. I think I'd say both my and your favorite sport to watch. So we got a week break here with the Pro Bowl in between, which, you know, just makes me shake my head because I hate watching it and probably won't even turn it on. So we get plenty of time to diagnose the Super Bowl in what should be, I think, a pretty good game.
It could be, yeah. And, of course, the Pro Bowl's only had, I think, 147 guys invited, and nobody wants to play in that game. I mean, you know, the season is long. They need to do something to make it a little bit more entertaining for the fans and for everybody because not even the players want to go to the Pro Bowl, and I mean, certainly it's just a bad do. I mean, they must make money on it, or they wouldn't keep doing it. What do you think?
I mean, I guess that's how it must go, but I just think not only is the game bad for me, but the timing is terrible. I mean, I'm in playoff football mode right now. All I want to see is good games and big time games. I don't want to take a week off, you know, after the championship game and wait for the Super Bowl with the Pro Bowl in between. I don't want to see that. I want the Super Bowl this week. You know, I think that's where, even though I'm not a big fan of the NBA All-Star game, it's a nice break in the middle or a little bit after the middle of the season where you get invited to the game. It's a big honor. You go, you play. If not, you go home, take a little break, kind of splits up the season a little bit. And same thing with the MLB. I mean, it's a thing in the middle where everybody's very invested, but we're not in playoff mode yet. You know, we're kind of just getting things going. It's a little break. I don't know if that necessarily worked in the NFL, but I think it might end up being a little better. But my thought about the game is I don't think anybody wants to play in the game. I mean, you just played football for you know, 24, 25 weeks in a row. Everybody's tired. Nobody wants to go into the offseason with a torn ACL from the Pro Bowl. I mean, it's just not a game, really, that can be played at half speed. It's not fun to watch. I mean, you know, baseball, it's not, I don't think it's necessarily that hard to give a full effort in the game because, you know, you're not playing, you know, full speed. The ball isn't in play the whole time. Basketball is more of just a show. It's fun to watch. It's fun to watch pick up basketball. Pick up football, not so much. So I would love to see, honestly, some more kind of skill competitions that really show us, you know, how great of an athlete, you know, these guys are, you know, like a quarterback longest throw, maybe sort of like, you know, a Pro Bowl combine, some sort of thing.
I could live with that. I mean, actually, it'd be even fun to watch like a 7-on-7. You know, where they're, you know, in pads and with no pads and just, because again, these guys don't want to get hurt, and football is, even the way they play it, you know, the guys can get hurt because you still have gear on. And again, I'm not a fan. I think the honor is good. And then the sad thing is some of the guys get cheated out of money because they weren't a selection and they're just an alternate. They don't get their bonus. So it just makes it a really bad thing. Of course, football players, out of all the sports, football players have it the worst financially as far as the grunt players and the linemen, except for the chosen few. because they, you know, they can be cut anytime. They don't have long-term contracts. They don't have guarantees, which is why they always get that big upfront money. But I think it could be a lot better. And I think that almost if you did what you're kind of saying and had a bye week for everybody in the middle of the season, everybody would be fine. And of course, you'd move on. But of course, that would take away from, you know, probably some of the revenue. So they probably, the league probably wouldn't be too happy with that. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, like we talked about, yeah, everything, it always comes down to money. But, I mean, for me, I consider myself, you know, not a super core, you know, watching sports center 24 hours a day sports fan, but a pretty darn good sports fan. And this Pro Bowl, I mean, it doesn't appeal to me at all. It never really has appealed to me. And I don't think it ever will in its current format. It's just not something I really want to watch. I'd almost rather throw on college basketball right now, which, you know, I don't usually start following until the tournament starts, you know, rather than watch the Pro Bowl, because it doesn't get me going at all. It doesn't really spark my interest. And, you know, obviously they're making money, but I think there's a better way to do it. And I don't know if playing a game in the middle of the season is a better way either, because I feel like football, you know, it just has the biggest chance of, you know, injury just with all the collisions. So even if they played the game 100%, I don't think it happened in the middle of the season either. I don't think it'd be a good game. But, you know, if they did something that was more enjoyable to watch, then I think it'd be better, because football fans want to see football. They don't want to see half speed and pads, you know, lollipop football.
Yeah, but that's kind of what they play anyway. So I think a couple of the interesting stories from the week, a couple of coach firings in the NBA, and what did you think about Blatt getting fired today? I mean, he doesn't get to go to the All-Star game. I mean, what did you think about all that?
I think it's kind of a farce. I mean, and this is one of my keynotes I wrote down for today's show. The guy makes the NBA Finals his first year as a coach. He's first place in the Eastern Conference, 5.5 games ahead of the second place team, has a 30-11 record, went 83-40. As the head coach of the Cavaliers, which was the fourth best stretch in the span that he was a coach in the NBA, and then you fire him. And I'm not saying that he didn't get along well with the team. I'm not saying that he was the best coach for that team. But are you seriously telling me that you're not going to let this guy finish out the year and coach when all he's done is go to the NBA Finals and be first place in the conference by a mile? Like, are you kidding me? I think it was a bunch of crap.
I mean, don't you think? I mean, that's where I think in the NBA the players have way too much say-so and way too much power. I mean, and then I'm not saying LeBron wanted him out or not, and I don't know who wanted him out, but maybe didn't hold the guys accountable to their actions. But, I mean, you can't tell me that the guy, you brought the guy in, granted you brought him in before you signed LeBron, but you brought him in to coach a team, the guy who got to the finals, and with a team that had two major injuries going into the finals and got beat, and now you've got a 5.5 game lead, and your team with your three stars on the court is basically unbeatable, and yet you still fire the guy. It's just not logical the way I look at things. I mean, I know you feel the same way. I mean, what is there an answer in your mind?
I mean, they really must have, you know, been really uncertain about the future. I mean, I think a part of it could have been that absolute drubbing by Golden State a couple weeks ago. I mean, I got to figure that played some sort of a role into this, because obviously it didn't come out of the blue, but I guess things just weren't really working to what they thought would be an NBA championship team. I mean, I got to think that, you know, that 40-point loss had something to do with it. I mean, that's one part of my explanation. And the other thing that I don't really understand with this whole thing is that they're saying, I mean, and LeBron's saying, you know, that he had nothing to do and had no say or no contact with the management about this. I mean, I have kind of a hard time believing that the best player of, you know, this century right now had nothing to do with this. And considering, you know, the amount of times, you know, we saw LeBron kind of undermine his coach, which he says he never does. There's a couple of videos that would kind of say otherwise, but, you know, that's really up for question. But I also have a hard time believing that, that LeBron had nothing, that was not even, you know, told about this. He said he was so shocked. What do you think?
I think it's correct. We'll come back and talk about that at the break. This is the Sporting Edge with Bob and Xander. We'll be right back now. The night. Edge with Bubba and Xander. And so, Xander, you know, I agree with you. I mean, again, look, I like LeBron. I think he got a bad rap when he did the whole deal years ago. I think he's a solid stand-up guy. I think he's a good player. But, again, you and I both know that the best players at any level are in the coach's ear or in the management's ear. And we know that he had to have something to do with it. I don't care what he says. What do you think?
I totally agree. And you know what? I was relatively indifferent towards LeBron as long as I've been watching basketball. After the decision came out, obviously, you know, I thought it was kind of childish, but seemed like he kind of grew up a little bit. And I've kind of reversed my opinion a little bit on LeBron. You know, especially with the firing of David Blatt and the way this whole thing played out, seemed kind of like, I don't want to call it a bullying thing with the management and LeBron, but it just didn't seem right to me. And I know that a lot of coaches around the league expressed a lot of frustration. Rick Carlisle of the Mavs even went as far as saying that, you know, this is an embarrassment to the league. You know, a guy, you know, like, what is success anymore if you're going to fire somebody who's had that, you know, track record in his year and a half as a coach? I mean, I just don't understand it, and I've lost respect for Dan Gilbert, who I never had much for anyways, as the owner of the Cavs. I've lost some respect for David Griffin, the GM of the Cavs. And I've lost some respect for LeBron because I think this whole thing played out sour, and I really hope the Cavs don't win. I hope they don't win a championship as long as LeBron's there, and I hope the city of Cleveland keeps suffering because this really ticked me off, and not that I'm a huge David Blatt fan, but I just thought this thing was a little bit out of line, and I hope the Cavs pay for it.
Yeah, and I do not disagree with you at all. I think that, of course, the whole situation, again, I think that comes with the money and the power that sports has not created. And that brings us to another, you know, potential problem in another sport. But as you move to baseball, you know, Bryce Harper is going to be up for, a new contract soon. And, based on what guys have been getting paid, I mean, are they going to be able to pay this guy with their current payroll? What do you think?
You know what? I think they're definitely going to try to find a way to make this work. I mean, Bryce Harper, say what you will, is turning into, if he isn't already, you know, the best player in the league. You know, he came up with the most highly touted prospect I think baseball's ever seen, maybe besides Ken Griffey. And, you know, played okay his first couple years and then broke out last year, had an unbelievable year. You know, there's talks that, you know, maybe he is MLB's first $400 million contract, and would he be worth it? You know, I can't disagree and say that he wouldn't be. I mean, considering, you know, the way he hit the ball last year and it's how good of a player he is, you know, what do you think? Do you think the Nats are going to man up and sign him?
I would find it hard for them not to be able to sign him, but again, they've got such a big payroll now. But, I mean, he is, you know, he's Steve Trout, Mike Trout. He is Bryce Harper. I mean, he is one of the best there is, and how you could not keep this guy as your franchise, it would be hard for me to believe that they could do that. But, of course, I've seen sillier things, you know, going on back and forth, you know, throughout all sports. And, you know, I mean, this goes back, you know, a million years. It's like anything else that, you know, problems come up and guys get in the way. And of course, then egos come into play. And, you know, it's a shame. But that's, you know, that's the new baseball. That's the whole free agency deal. That's the whole money. I mean, they're making so much money that it's like monopoly money with all these guys. And that becomes the bigger problem. And of course, we talked about this last week, but Cespedes and the Mets finally worked out a deal, and somehow they got him to stay. Now, again, I'm not sure they're so happy they got him to stay, but they were able to work out a deal with him. And, I mean, he's arguably one of the best players in baseball as well, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, and I think when you look at, not only did he have the best statistical year of his career last year, and he hit .290, hit almost 40 home runs, I think he was that, you know, that catalyst that really turned the Mets season around. I mean, we talked about it, you know, during baseball. We talked about it on and off after the season. I mean, the Mets couldn't even hit the ball before he came, and he came into that lineup second half of the season, a switch flip, and you know they ran into the playoffs and were playing awesome until, you know, the World Series, where, you know, some of their best guys let them down. But I mean, he, you know, really changed this team around, and I'm glad they signed him back. I think this Mets team is fun to watch, especially with that starting rotation. I mean, I think you got to put him back in World Series talks. I mean, you know, and I think he's got a big part to do with that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that he's, you know, again, I don't know if he's a cancer or whatever, because obviously he's been on so many teams, but you can't argue his abilities of playing, and certainly, you know, as we look in, and of course, you know, just in a couple of weeks, pitchers and catchers report, and you know, we're gonna get the baseball season off. What have you thought? Have you thought of anything of some of these offseason deals and trades? I mean, Todd Frazier going to the White Sox, Samardzija going to the Giants. You got any thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think so far the Giants have spent a lot of money. I mean, they've shown that, you know, they're in it to win it. And, you know, whether you think the guys they got are any good, I mean, they spent a lot of money for Samardzija and Leake, who I think their combined ERA last year was over 4. But, I mean, they've got a shot. I think the Giants, as long as Bruce Bochy, you know, Buster Posey, you know, Brandon Crawford, as long as guys like that are still in the Giants, I think they're always going to be in it. I mean, I know they had a rough year last year. Never could really nail it down, but I mean, you got to think that they've got a shot. And obviously, Madison Bumgarner has shown us that, you know, while he is one of the best pitchers in baseball, he is the best postseason pitcher in baseball. And you know, I like it. I always thought Samardzija was better than he showed. I mean, I know he's got a lot of talent. Never has really put it together with, you know, with the Cubs or the White Sox or the A's. But you know, he's got a chance. He will throw the ball. I mean, one thing about him, he does get out there and throw innings, just like Mike Leake does. I mean, you can say what you want about the guys, but all they've done throughout their career is gone out there, made 30 starts a year, and, you know, they haven't been out of, they're not out of the league yet, so they're obviously doing something well enough, and I think the Giants are a team to look out for this year.
Listen, it's going to be an even year, so even more to watch out for. And what's your thoughts? The Yankees, the only team not to sign a free agent this year.
Kind of baffling. I mean, when you look at, this is a major talk of the Yankees last year. During the deadline, they didn't really make a move, and a lot of people were thinking, you know, you guys are right in the thick of things, and you look like you need a couple upgrades. You know, maybe on the mound, you know, maybe at the plate, and you don't do anything, and they ended up falling short by a few games at the end of the year. Doesn't really make much sense to me. You know, I think they could definitely use another bat right now. I mean, I feel like teams, you can always use pitching, but I think that was one of their weaknesses last year. They could also use a starting pitcher. I mean, you know, they picked up Aroldis Chapman, you know, who's obviously one of the best closers in the league, and they picked up Starlin Castro through trade, but, you know, I think they're lacking some top-of-the-rotation power, and I thought Wei-Yin Chen was a guy who might have gone there, but he decided to go elsewhere. So kind of baffling. I know the Yankees are always the Yankees, but you know, sometimes you need some players, and I'm kind of surprised the Yankees didn't step up a little bit and at least sign one guy, you know, maybe even do a mediocre contract.
Yeah, it is interesting. And of course, Aroldis Chapman, he might not, you know, he might get suspended. You know, he got cleared of charges, but they're Major League Baseball hasn't run it through yet, so he could still, you know, he could be gone a good part of the year. So that's always something that, you know, we have to look at as well is, you know, is he going to play? And that is always interesting because, you know, again, he could be at the mercy. And of course, they've got a great bullpen set up, but, you know, is Tanaka going to ever come back? And, you know, there's a lot of issues there. And, you know, I mean, is A-Rod, could A-Rod possibly have another year like he had last year?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, I think the answer's got to be yes, because I couldn't have sat here last year at this time and said that A-Rod was going to have the year that he had. So, I mean, I've got to think he's got a little bit left. Not much. I mean, you know, the guy's almost 40 years old. I mean, something's got to give eventually, but I couldn't count him out after the year he had last year when I thought he had nothing left. So, I mean, that's possible. I mean, but, you know, they're going to need a lot of guys to step up this year, and I really don't think they have the talent to do it. I mean, the Blue Jays, I know they lost David Price, but that team was pretty darn good before they acquired him, and I think they still got Tulo. So, I mean, this division is going to be tough. The Orioles re-signed Chris Davis.
We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. Make sure if you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm, and pick it up. The Sporting Edge, Bubba and Xander, will be right back after the break.
trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Sporting Edge with Bubba and Sanders. Again, you were talking about the division and how tough it is, and Toronto did actually probably losing price, but they did get better as well. So go ahead and finish, please.
Yeah, and then I was saying how Chris Davis got re-signed by the Orioles. I mean, he's one of the best power-hitting first basemen in the game. And staying in the interdivision and on topic of first base, the Red Sox say that Hanley Ramirez is going to make the move to first base this season. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't like Hanley Ramirez. I never liked him. He's an injury guy. I don't think he's a team guy. He might work out in that system there, but I really don't see it. But, you know, what are your thoughts?
You know, I don't think it couldn't be any worse than what we saw last season in left field. I mean, that was just an absolute disaster. You know, and I got to give him a little slack. I mean, they didn't really pay him to come in, you know, be the best defensive left fielder in the game. You know, that they paid him to hit the freaking ball as hard as he can, and he did a pretty good job of putting up some numbers last year. But I got to think the move, it cannot possibly be any worse than what he was in left field last year. I mean, I know as he was a young player with the Marlins, he was never a great defensive shortstop. Probably a little bit below average, but you got to think for a guy with the talent to play shortstop in the major leagues, making the move, you know, within the infield to first base, I don't think it could end up possibly being that bad. You know, people think first base is a lot easier than it is, and, you know, I would disagree a little bit. I mean, there's definitely more than just standing on the base and catching the ball, but I think when it comes to, you know, being within the infield and not having to make that throw across the infield, I think it definitely works in his favor. I mean, maybe outfield, it was just so drastically different that he struggled that much. But you got to think that if there's one guy who can be versatile on a baseball field, it's got to be the shortstop. I mean, it's the best defensive infielder, and it didn't work out in left field. But I think first base could bring a little promise. Maybe it takes a little less pressure off of him, and he produces even more at the plate. Because there's one thing you can't deny about Hanley Ramirez. When he's healthy, which we like to see him a little more healthy than he usually is, but, I mean, the guy mashes the ball. I mean, he's got, you know, he slugs 550, hits 290, hits 30 home runs, and he's really a special talent. And I think he's going to be a key cog in this division this year because, you know, with the signing of David Price, you know, Hanley's going to have a good season, I think, for this Red Sox team to pull through, along with Clay Buchholz. But let's move on and go into a little NFL news. Johnny Manziel's seen partying again. Is this a big deal or no?
What a shock! Well, I think he's gone from Cleveland. I think that that Hugh Jackson's going to give him the door. You know, I think that it's not a surprise. I think Johnny Manziel legitimately has a problem. I think he's got emotional problems, and I think he's probably got an alcohol problem, and he cannot now for whatever reason. This is always, you know, something that I've always asked many of you guys is, how can you not realize what you're giving up to have that beer or whatever you're doing, the party? I mean, if you keep your nose clean for a couple of years, you're set for life. Why can't these guys see it? So, I mean, Johnny Manziel, in my mind, is a bust. I think he was a reach. I thought he had a chance to be good, but I think he's got no chance now. And I don't know that, you know, I'm sure some people pick him up because, listen, he's still got some skills, but I think he's gone from Cleveland. What do you say?
You know, I don't think he's 100% gone, but I really do believe what Hugh Jackson said. You know, he said basically, if we have the opportunity to pick a quarterback who we think, you know, is the right spot to take one and that could take us forward in the future, we're going to take him. So, you know, that kind of tells you that either he basically said, you know, we're not going to worry about one. We're not just going to worry about Johnny Manziel. I mean, Johnny Manziel is not the Cleveland Browns organization, and he's just a part of it. And he said, you know, if we have think we have the right spot and the right guy who we think is going to take us forward, we're going to take him. What that means for Johnny Manziel is if they draft a quarterback in the first round, that probably labels the end for Johnny Manziel. But regardless of whether they do or do not draft a quarterback, Johnny Manziel will get another chance to start, I think, in the NFL. I kind of label him as, you know, that maybe guy, because when you think of Johnny Manziel, there's not that many NFL highlights, but what you do think of is his time at Texas A&M where he just terrorized defenses, and he was just unbelievably talented. I remember watching him play against Alabama and just tore it up. You know, a Heisman, a second place vote the next year. I mean, the guy just made so many plays that I don't think you're ever going to forget about it. So I think he's going to get another shot somewhere. And I think with all the partying and stuff, I mean, obviously, he likes to party. But I think he also is in a much bigger limelight because of his past. I mean, when you get caught with something once and you do it again, you know, not to say that, you know, he's over 21 years old, he can do whatever he wants, but to be in the news over and over again for something that you went to rehab for and, you know, has kind of let your team down in a certain sense, you know, missing that last week when they said he was reportedly in Vegas, it just doesn't look good. And when you have, you know, people watching you and all that, they're looking at your every move. So, I mean, that's something that I think eventually, if he doesn't figure that out within the next year or two, I think he won't get picked up. It'll be like a Ray Rice situation where people just want to stay away. But I think the guy definitely has some talent. It just depends, can he hone it all in at once? And that brings me to a question. Who do you think has a better future in this league right now, Johnny Manziel or RG3?
That is a pretty good question. You know, I would say right now, Johnny Manziel, because he's still, as you're talking, there are still those memories. But, you know, I wouldn't, obviously, RG3 will not be with the Redskins next year. And there are teams in need. And if he's healthy, there's guys that will take a chance on him. What? How do you feel?
You know, I think I'd have to go with RG3 here. I mean, I know that Manziel's a little fresher in our memories and whatnot, but I mean, RG3 did have success at the pro level, and that's something that, I mean, that's something you can't really say about Johnny Manziel. I mean, you say what you want, but you can't tell me that he's been a good pro so far in any sense of the word. I think RG3 is a guy, this situation unraveled so fast in Washington, and, you know, it kind of, I'm not going to say it didn't work out for him, because Kirk Cousins turned out to be, you know, a Pro Bowl kind of caliber QB, I think, down the stretch for the Redskins. And they made the playoffs. I know they got whooped by Green Bay, but they still found a way to make it. And I think it worked out well for them. On the other hand, I think RG3, you know, kind of got swept under the rug. But I just can't forget about what he did his rookie year. I mean, the guy has enough talent to play in this league. I just think it's a matter of him, you know, kind of redefining his game, maybe not being that, you know, quarterback who's running all over the field. He isn't that big of a body. But he showed us, I think he's got the arm too. So I think down the line, I think RG3 has got a chance to get picked up. On the topic of quarterbacks, though, Eagles vice president comes out and says, kind of non-committal on Sam Bradford for next year. You know, this kind of goes against a little bit what the new coach of the Eagles, Doug Peterson, said. You know, he kind of talked up Bradford. Bradford, I think, was kind of mediocre last year. 65% completion rate, 19 TDs, 14 interceptions in 14 games. Do you think the Eagles stick with him next year? And if yes, why? If no, why not?
Well, I think they will, because I don't know if there's somebody better out there. I think he was certainly miscast in Chip Kelly's offense. certainly he was never a running quarterback. And certainly in Chip Kelly's offense, you need a running quarterback. So I think that they will keep him unless something opens up. Now, if they want to try to continue to run that type of offense that they're running, then, you know, maybe they go after RG3 because, you know, I don't disagree with you. RG3 does have the ability to, I would hope RG3 would learn something from Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson has been able to be extremely durable over the last 3 years, and actually over his career with the style that he plays. And certainly he is pretty wild out there and makes a lot of unbelievable plays, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think my thought on Sam Bradford is, you know, he wasn't great. He never really has been great. I mean, even his best year, 21 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, has had a lot of problems with injuries. If you look at his 6 seasons in the league, but my thought is, like, this league, you need a quarterback to win. You absolutely do. I mean, the running game in the NFL, I think, has drastically changed over the past 5 or 6 years. And I'm not saying that Sam Bradford is, you know, Tom Brady or, you know, one of those guys, but I think he's better than your average quarterback off the street. And we all know that drafting a quarterback is, you know, no guarantee. It's no guarantee in the long run, nor is it, you know, most likely not a guarantee the first year. If we look at, you know, the past 2 years in the NFL, most rookie QBs, I think I would say besides this year, but, you know, you look at Blake Bortles, took him a little bit to develop, you know, guys like that. I mean, you're not guaranteed anything. I think Sam Bradford, although he hasn't really proven it, I still think he's got a chance to be a decent quarterback. And that team does have some weapons. I mean, they just re-signed Zach Ertz, their tight end, to one of the biggest tight end contracts in the NFL. They got Jordan Matthews, who, you know, had a down year last year, but everybody in the offense kind of had a down year. And he was supposed to be a top 15 fantasy wide receiver. I think he showed some flashes. He's got the skills. Nelson Aguilar, did great things at USC. He's a great number two to have. They still have DeMarco Murray. They still got a lot of talent in that backfield. I feel like they need to shore up the offensive line a little bit. But, I mean, honestly, I'd keep Bradford. I mean, I think, you know, there's not really much to go without him.
I mean, I agree. I mean, I do think Bradford under the right system could be good. But again, I don't think he was in the right system, unfortunately for him. But we're going to come back after the break and actually break down last week's games and look forward to next week, as this is one of our final football shows. This is The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We're going to step by have a break. Make sure if you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm. We'll be right back after the break. The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. Welcome back to The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. And Xander, so again, I do agree, Sam Bradford, right system could be playing, and hopefully Philly will make that switch. But, okay, you and I were discussing during the week, and we talked about the games ourselves, and, you know, we made a losing selection, but we lost. We really lost big. And, of course, I did like Denver, and you liked the other side, but that's, you know, that's part of that, why they trade. That's why they have markets, and that's why they put up point spreads. But overall, I think as we look at the games, and I think I first want to look at the Carolina Arizona game. Carson Palmer, okay, I had him this year in my league, and he was great. He was my number one player, and he was awesome. But we can talk about it's his broken finger, or we can talk about that he just doesn't step up in the big game. I don't have the answer, but certainly in the two biggest games of his career, he played as bad as a person can play and looked as lost as a guy could look. And some guys, as I've said before, just don't have the capability to step up in the big game. What is your take?
My take is that I think things, although Carson Palmer is by no means a young guy, I don't think you can really label him as a guy who doesn't step up in big games yet. You know, if his career ended tomorrow, you could say that. But, I mean, you look back at his career. Before this season, he played in 2 playoff games his entire career, one of which he was injured after the first play on that infamous, torn ACL, MCL in 2006. The other game, average, about a 55 quarterback rating. And I think we, after watching this game against Carolina this past week, I don't think his Green Bay performance was as bad as we labeled it. I mean, he was okay, made a lot, he had some turnovers also, but he did throw for 300 yards, had 3 touchdowns. So he did some good things there. But this past week was atrocious. And I know I talked to you a little bit about how it was the finger and whatnot. Kind of going back on that, I think maybe a little bit had to do with the finger, but I think he just flat up played a horrendous game. I mean, made a lot of bad decisions that you didn't really see at all throughout the regular season. And I point to the finger. I pointed to it before because I'm thinking this guy played such a wonderful regular season. I mean, what really changes, you know, besides the intensity of the game? You know, but he had a great week 17 the week after, or 2 weeks after he hurt that finger. So, I mean, part of me has to go with, you know, he just kind of more or less shit the bed against the Panthers.
He puked it up.
All right. So, you know, if we're going to label him right now, yes, he doesn't step up to the big game, but, you know, I don't know if I like to label people, you know, after three games, when I think this is, you know, looking into the far, far future, I'm calling the Cardinals as my Super Bowl champion next year.
I wouldn't be surprised. I think they're a great team, and I think Carson Palmer's a great quarterback. And then if you look on the other side of the ball, look at the Cam Newton boy. Boy, has he been something this year or what?
He's been unbelievable, and I think this is the culmination, I think, of this entire season for Cam Newton. You know, this Panthers team, for me, as a sports fan, is eerily similar to Clemson and how they were going to the national championship game. I mean, how many 15-1 seasons have we seen in the NFL? And how many teams, you know, have walked through the playoffs? You know, besides Seattle coming back, have walked through the playoffs with relative ease. And meanwhile, you know, we're sitting here, they're only a 4-point favorite against the Peyton Manning-led team. They remind me a lot of Clemson because it just seems like maybe they are that good, but until they win the biggest game of them all, like, I can't put all my faith into the Panthers when they haven't shown me that they can win the biggest game.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I mean, look, I think Cam Newton was great, and I think it's unbelievable. The cast around him was not very, his defense is great, but the offensive cast around him was not very good, but he certainly made guys look great in that team, and certainly they have a great defense, and they certainly showed it. I mean, obviously 6 turnovers, and again, some of those are, you know, slop turnovers, but some were big and big spots of the game. But as we look at the other game, Denver, New England, and I thought it would be a defensive battle, and of course, Peyton Manning, not like Carson Palmer, did not make the big mistake. He threw the ball away. He missed a lot of easy throws, but he managed the game, and the defense carried the day, and they made Tom Brady look like he never played football before. And of course, the offensive line coach got fired right after that. Now, I don't get that either. But at the end of the day, I mean, the defense, and we talk about this often here on the show, is defense almost always carries the day. Now, you know, when we come looking at that last week, I mean, you know, the Broncos did just enough to win. And I mean, it was amazing that they won actually after they gave up those two big fourth downs back to back and somehow stopped the 2-point conversion. What were your takeaway from that game?
You know what, if Tom Brady, who I think is probably the best quarterback in the league, you know, wasn't doing anything against that pass rush, nobody would have. I mean, Tom Brady that game got assaulted from every angle. You know, he got hit. I think he got hit 14 or 15 times, which is something that didn't happen all year. You got to give so much credit to that Denver defensive line. I mean, Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware just played absolutely out of their minds. And, you know, I'm not surprised that Denver won because, you know, with that much pressure on the quarterback the entire game, it's very hard to play. And it was kind of weird. Watching the fourth quarter, I thought it was kind of like a replay. You know, Denver had the ball. They tried to push down the field. They give it back to the Patriots. Patriots need a touchdown. They don't get it. That kept going back and forth. And finally, we're sitting at fourth down. You know, there's no time left in the game. We're like, this is actually it. This is the last fourth down. This is the last drive they're going to get. They convert, and then they convert again with the touchdown. It was a pretty crazy game. But like you said about Peyton Manning, it was kind of, you know, a moot point. I mean, after the first quarter when he threw those two touchdowns, didn't really do anything to win in the game. Didn't really do anything to lose in the game. Put it in the hands of his defense. His defense came through, although by a very slim margin at the end. But, You know, I think you got to give it to the Denver defense in this game because that was a true difference. I mean, how much pressure was on Tom Brady was what really changed how this game and how it was played.
Right. And so, you know, again, the Pats had nothing and Belichick had no answers. And, you know, there were some strange calls in that game. But so now you're looking at, you know, going forward a week, 8 days from now. Okay. And you've got the game. Now, I had said, believe it or not, I said on Varney, before the season started, that Peyton Manning would win the Super Bowl in Denver and ride off on the white horse. Now, certainly he's not the best quarterback in this game, but is it a storybook ending in your opinion? We'll get more into it next week, but for now, is this a storybook ending for Peyton Manning?
My gut feeling is yes. I think it is.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, I mean, it's amazing the defense is going to be great. Now, again, we've seen what a beast Newton is and how many teams had so much trouble getting him down. But I don't know that those receivers get so wide open against this defense. And I don't know that they don't, you know, customize a defense for him. So I do think that, you know, this will be, and we'll break it down more next week, but I do think that this is going to be the fairy tale ending, that Peyton Manning will ride off into the sunset on the white horse as the oldest quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl. And you know who the oldest quarterback before that was, don't you?
John Elway.
So John Elway will have his his oldest quarterback ever to win a Super Bowl, hopefully, replaced. And I think that the betting line, although it has gone up, told you that, you know, the odds makers believe that the fair numbers are somewhere, you know, 4, 5, or 6 in that area. And I really thought that Carolina would be 7 or higher. So I was kind of shocked by that. But I do think that it will be the storybook ending for Peyton Manning. And I do think he'll ride off. And I think it'll be a great way, because the bottom line is he ain't coming back there next year. Even if he plays next year, he ain't coming back to Denver. Brock Osweiler is the quarterback of Denver. So the best solution for them and for Denver and for Peyton Manning is to go ahead and win this world championship. So that'll do it for today's edition of the Sporting Edge. We always appreciate you being here, and can't wait to get back and now start getting into hoops every week and taking care of business. And of course, working our way up and building the website to get everybody in, because we've got a lot of big plans for the Sporting Edge. But make sure if you ever miss an episode, go to the libertytalk.fm, the Sporting Edge on demand. But that'll do it for today. Everybody have a great weekend. This has been the Sporting Edge. We appreciate you being here. And if you watch the Pro Bowl, enjoy it. Otherwise, we'll see you here next week, everybody. Have a great one. Thank you so much. The Sporting Edge with Bubba and Xander. We'll see you next week.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.